WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This is In the Loop. I'm Lisa Labas, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Stick around for a breakdown of the top stories of the day in the Chicago area later this episode. But first, the Environmental Protection Agency is tasked with protecting the health of people and the environment. And for the first time ever, the agency will no longer consider the benefit of lives saved by limits on air pollution when it sets new regulations. However, the EPA will continue to calculate the cost to companies of complying with these rules. The rules change was spelled out in internal EPA documents that were reviewed by the New York Times. So what's ahead for the air we breathe? Here to discuss is Brian Urbacheski, who is Director of Environmental Health Programs at the Respiratory Health Association. Also, Anthony Moser, Board President of Neighbors for Environmental Justice and a McKinley Park resident on Chicago's Southwest Side. And our sustainability contributor, Karen Weigert, is Director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. Karen kicked us off by explaining what it means to estimate the monetary cost of human life saved by these kinds of regulations.
It's an approach the EPA has taken really for decades, and they look at the dollars that essentially the economy absorbs when private entities don't absorb the cost of pollution. So essentially, they actually do an interesting calculation where they look at what someone requires in higher pay to work in a more dangerous situation. And then they use that to then assign a dollar value. But what this really means is they would assign a dollar value to the health and mortality issues that impact all the people who are not inside the organization and the company causing pollution. And now they're saying, particularly for PM2.5 and ozone, that they're no longer looking to assign that dollar value to the health side, but they're continuing to assign a dollar value to the cost to the company to reduce pollution.
Okay, and you mentioned one of the items that one of the pollutants that they're going to be regulating and that these rules kind of deal with, and I want to get to that in a little bit. But our In the Loop producer, Linnea Dominic, spoke with Nicole Cantello, who is president of the American Federation of Government Employees Local 704, and this union represents EPA workers in Region 5. Region 5 covers Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and here's how Nicole Cantello says this change will impact staff and, by extension, residents.
When the EPA staff in Region 5, which covers Illinois, goes out and to each one of these polluters and inspects them, EPA staff can only enforce the standard that EPA puts on the books and says is protective of human health and the environment. And if EPA is not putting in place a standard that is calculating what the health benefits are, then that standard is not protective of human health and the environment. And therefore, EPA staff is not able to protect the people of Illinois and the people of the Great Lakes.
So basically, the EPA can't do its job. All right. Brian, this change applies to ozone and particulate matter called, it's a particulate matter 2.5, PM 2.5. And these are super tiny particles that are floating in the air. Can you explain, please, the impacts these pollutants have on the health of people in Chicago?
Sure. When you're talking about fine particles, we're talking about something that's about 1/30th the width of a human hair. Ugh. So it goes through your nose, down your throat, into the deepest portions of your lungs. And from there, it can get into your bloodstream. Those tiny particles are connected to a myriad of health problems, ranging from asthma attacks to heart attacks. They're tied to dementia. They're connected with premature births. There's a whole laundry list of things. But it leads to more hospitalizations. It leads to more premature deaths. More people die when you breathe more of this material. For ozone, ozone is a caustic gas. Okay. It's a byproduct of all the exhaust from power plants, factories, cars, trucks that go up into the air and cook mostly during the summertime. So you need solar radiation to sort of cook all those ingredients, and it makes ozone as a byproduct. But what that is it's as a caustic gas. It will literally burn the insides of your lungs. It will oxidize things. And that same thing leads to more asthma attacks, more hospitalizations, you know, more premature deaths.
People are sicker.
People are sicker, and people are going to be, you know, missing work, missing school. They're going to be spending more money for medical treatment, for drugs. And in some cases, you know, people are going to be hospitalized and some people are going to die.
Yeah. Anthony Moser, Chicago officials estimate nearly 30 different census tracts across the city are what they call environmental justice neighborhoods. And that includes McKinley Park, where you live on the southwest side. Can you describe for us what that's like living there day to day?
Yeah, I mean, so we're talking about an area where there's a heavy concentration of industrial facilities, factories, warehouses. There's a lot of attendant diesel traffic that is servicing those facilities. And so, you know, I live pretty close to Matt Asphalt. And like when they had opened up in our neighborhood, you could just smell it sometimes even before you get out of bed in the morning. Like, and so dealing with those kinds of pollution on a daily basis, it's just something that you have higher rates of asthma and you can literally feel it in the air.
How long have you lived in McKinley Park?
Let's see. I moved down there since 2008.
Okay. So like 18, 19 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a while, did you notice it right when you first moved in? The air quality?
I certainly noticed it when that facility had opened up, but they're not the only ones. And you can notice it when there's a lot of truck traffic, especially. And also, these things all get worse in the summertime, the heat. And also, then you have people trying to be outdoors more. So you're at the park, you know, which is a place that people are going, you know, for fresh air and to be outdoors and experience nature. And then you have the kind of worsened effects of all of that diesel traffic and the heat to make it worse.
The Trump administration says the EPA has calculated the monetary cost of health benefits and that's misguided, that this calculating what a life is worth. I want to hear again from Nicole Cantello, president of the union representing EPA Region 5 workers.
There is no exact precise way of calculating anything when it comes to pollution. Everyone in the environmental pollution sphere has been in the business of calculating what the risks are, what the costs are, in a way that is the most precise way science can tell us right now. In fact, the way that costs are calculated to businesses is not an exact science either. We are all just trying to calculate the costs and benefits here in the best way possible, in the best way that science can tell us at this point. And we should be doing that with regard to human health and the environment, just as we are doing that with regard to businesses.
All right. So, Karen, cost to companies will continue to be calculated. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting in the sense because this is a rule that the Biden administration did the initial calculations for, and so the Trump administration then did the final. And in the original update that the Biden administration did, they had calculated human health benefits for PM2.5 and ozone, and they were in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And this idea of protecting human health, if you have to do the math, you have to do costs and benefits. But the math in this updated final version is only doing the cost to companies. Okay. And so the societal benefit of all of us with better air to breathe and hopefully better health outcomes is no longer being put into the calculation. And it's a stunning turn of events when this is the way the EPA has always done things. And now suddenly the benefits are no longer in the dollars.
Anthony, what are your thoughts on these changes then?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely trying to use priceless and worthless as the same kind of word. And I think we have come to expect at this point that, you know, Lee Zeldin wasn't appointed to lead the EPA as much as to dismantle it. And I think that we also then have a need to see local action by the city and by the state to step into the regulatory gaps that are being created by that dismantling.
Yeah. And Brian, give me your thoughts here.
you know, this is a complicated issue. I mean, just to backtrack a little bit, when we're talking about like clean air and what's out there, there's clean air standards, which are, you know, what is the yardstick we're using to measure how healthy the air is? And EPA is supposed to use only science to set those standards. What should the health standard be? What should our goal be? What should our North Star be? Then there are pollution rules, and the rules are how you get to that goal. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at, you know, tailpipe standards for trucks is one good example. And, you know, what the EPA is saying is that your life is worthless, you know, that the companies are going to incur expenses for, you know, adding devices to filter out the pollution or to tweak the engine to make sure that the engine doesn't make the pollution. And they're going to count those dollar impacts, but they're not going to count, you know, the medical impacts of the pain and suffering and, you know, the real cost of death to families.
Yeah. What about your anticipation that this could impact the administration's ability to roll back existing limits on pollution?
Well, you know, just to kind of follow the theme of, you know, diesel exhaust and, you know, diesel truck engine exhaust standards, there are prohibitions to for people to not tamper with devices that and equipment to that is on a truck that is designed to lower the amount of air pollution that comes out and that people breathe. And the Department of Justice just a couple days ago decided to drop all cases and not pursue any future cases against any kind of company that's selling tampering equipment that allows people to disable pollution controls on vehicles. So this, I mean, this is a multifaceted attack, as you know, the other guests have said, on the ability to breathe clean air.
Okay. Karen, what about the possibility of rolling back existing limits on pollution then?
Yeah, I do think this is not a standalone. And as Brian said, there are other cases where the current administration has no longer put a dollar value on benefits of environmental change. They've done it in climate more broadly. I think about things like the rules and regulations that impact the air that we all breathe. And when you've seen prior administrations put out updated regulations, for example, just on fleet efficiency, there would always be a calculation of here's the human health benefit. Mm. And that has allowed the underlying legal structure, which is really the Clean Air Act, to have an aggregate impact of, it's a 30-to-1 human benefit to cost for the totality of the Clean Air Act over decades. So that the idea that that is being threatened does really call into question what future environmental regulations are going to look like if we're no longer allowed to put a dollar on the externality, and that externality is actually our health.
Yeah. Anthony, the group that you work with, Neighbors for Environmental Justice, part of your work is doing air monitoring. In the neighborhood where you live and all around the Southwest side, how do you think this federal level change will impact the work you do?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't think there's a direct and immediate impact because there are sort of layers involved, right, from creating these standards to then how that becomes a part of the process of measuring what different facilities are doing and then enforcing those regulations. What we have locally is basically air quality locally is going to be most affected by decisions at the city and state level,
right,
to manage, right, and enforce compliance with local permitting.
Okay, so what do you want to see the city then do?
Well, I guess there are two things to think about here. One is that it's certainly a lot easier to stop a new facility from starting to pollute than it is to regulate and manage existing facilities, right? So, like, there's a cumulative impacts ordinance that is currently, I think, in the zoning committee that would try to require the city to have a consideration of what the health impact would be of a new facility before adding more pollution to an area that already has a lot of it. And then the second component of this is, you know, enforcing existing laws with current businesses that are operating. And unfortunately, the city effectively does not enforce environmental laws. If we think about like a bar where people keep shooting each other, right, the city will shut it down.
Sure.
If you think about, you know, a restaurant where people are getting, you know, food poisoning, the city will shut it down as a threat to public health. But if you have a facility that is, you know, polluting the air consistently for years in a neighborhood, they might get an occasional ticket, but there isn't really a strategic approach that says, how are we going to actually solve this problem in a way that makes the air clean? And so like that is where we really need to see change. We need to see something happening to prevent new facilities from opening up and making it worse, mm-hmm. considering the health impacts on people who live in those areas, and then enforcing existing laws.
Yeah, yeah. And Brian, what about the state level? What do you want to see at the state level?
I was, you were thinking what was in my head. You know, again, to go back to the idea that there's a health standard and then there's the rules of how you reduce the pollution to get to that standard. The state of Illinois has the ability to set its own health standard as well for things like ozone and fine particulate matter. And we're talking about the rules here and like what US EPA rules could be rolled back or prevented from happening. But that standard, that health standard, is also under attack. US EPA is trying to repeal the existing fine particulate standard, the goal that we're trying to meet, to weaken it. So to say that, you know, the state could set its own health standard, and then it could set its own rules as to how to get to that standard independent of the federal government. So, you know, like what Anthony's saying about, you know, local action, we do have the ability to do that here in Illinois with leadership from the governor and the General Assembly, the state EPA, the Illinois Pollution Control Board. And I should say, too, that, you know, there are legal questions about what US EPA is doing and saying that lives are worthless, essentially, and they will not count them. There's probably some legal difficulties with that, and it would be good to see the Illinois Attorney General's office weigh in and say, hey, this is not legal. You can't do this. You can't say people's lives are worthless.
So you would support some court activity to, you know, like, let's take some of these changes to court. Let's get that taken care of that way.
As Karen said, this is a long-term, multifaceted fight. And, you know, we do have legal rights here. There are laws on the books that can't be ignored.
Yeah. Speaking of ordinances and things, Anthony, I want to ask you about the Hazel Johnson Cumulative Impact Ordinance. So I've not heard of this. Can you first tell me what it is and how do you think these rules will change that?
Sure. So essentially, in a lot of respects, it's a zoning bill. And it comes out of originally federal action, right? There was a federal agreement with the Department of Housing and Urban Development in response to the city of Chicago having a pattern of discriminatory planning and zoning. So like when we talk about there being a lot of pollution on the southwest side, it's not so much an accidental thing as like a deliberate choice by the city to concentrate those kind of facilities in these neighborhoods. Mm. And as a part of that settlement agreement, there was completing the cumulative impacts assessment to understand where all the pollution is located and kind of how that is affecting people. And then also to introduce an ordinance that would try to change that. And so specifically the goal is to try and change the current zoning where we have industrial corridors where there are basically, there is no consideration of health impact. If you want to build a factory and you're putting it in an industrial corridor, the zone for that, then you are, it's called by right, right? So you are allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. If you want to build a warehouse that's going to have a lot of new trucking activity come to the neighborhood, there are huge portions of the city where you can do that. And so the goal of the Hazel Johnson Cumulative Impacts Ordinance is to change this citywide so that you always have to consider how much pollution is already there before you can approve a new facility.
Okay. And then we're going to have to wind up here in a little bit, but Brian and Karen, I want to ask you, what are you keeping your eyes on next? We'll start with Karen.
It's been a busy year already.
Yeah.
As we look ahead, I think there's going to be this real question of what are the layers of local, state, and then federal? We are seeing significant pushback across the board at the federal level. But talking about the Hazel Johnson ordinance, she was a local leader. Chicago has been at the forefront of environmental justice, and she's often considered the godmother or grandmother of environmental justice. So this idea of how do we build from here up and connect the great air quality that we demand with the future that we expect is going to have to happen through a variety of levels, and we're not going to see a lot of support coming at the federal.
Yeah, Brian?
Well, what I'm actually looking at right now is that the fine particle standard that we've been talking about, and, you know, those fine particles that send people to the hospital and kill them, the U.S. EPA has asked the courts to throw out the new, tighter PM standard that was put in place a year and a half ago. And that is going to be happening in early February. There's going to be a court decision. You know, we're going to see if the courts are going to defend our rights to clean air.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. And at the table to help me break them down, Susie Yan, editor of WBEZ's Curious City, Michael Puente, WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor, and Mohamed Samra, who is a Chicago Sun-Times reporter. And we had to start out by talking about the cold, so I asked the panel if they had thawed out from their morning commute.
Sure.
Sure. I'm a cold weather lover myself, but even... it got a little too cold for me, so I totally admit that I was defeated.
Yes. Still was wearing two socks today, two pairs of
two
socks.
Two socks.
I just kept looking at photos when I visited Miami about a year ago, and the heat and the sun and life in general is happening.
Warm weather dreams.
Warm weather dreams. How are you, Mohamed?
Green grass.
Yeah, still freezing. I actually had to drive on Friday night, and even in a fully warm car, my feet still felt that burning sensation of the negative, you know, deep negative 20, negative 30 degree wind chills.
Yikes. Susie, what was the main, the cold weather, definitely a main character this weekend. What was the impact at airports this weekend?
Oh my goodness. So like that's over thousands of flights across the U.S. were canceled this weekend. And that was like a winter storm rolling through much of the country, not just Chicago. But of course, that affected the Chicago area. Flight Tracker Flight Aware reported nearly 2,000 delays happened at O'Hare over the weekend, and about 200 happened at Midway. And even today, we aren't done yet. Over 150 flights into and out of O'Hare have been canceled so far today. Mm-hmm. So if you are planning to travel today, definitely check that out before you head to the airport.
I would assume on time is a dream. We'll see. How about power outages, Mohamed?
Yeah, so I did a quick check this morning at ComEd's outage map. Looks like things have been pretty normal, but that wasn't the case on Friday morning, where roughly 1,500 ComEd customers were without power. A ComEd spokesperson had told me that they suspect that was related to the cold, but that they had additional crews on standby just in case outages surged throughout the weekend.
Were they able to bring people back up online pretty quickly?
Yeah, I was keeping track of that outage map periodically Friday morning into Friday afternoon. And by late Friday morning, early Friday afternoon, things looked like they were pretty much resolved.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah. Thank goodness. Michael, hundreds of people braved the freezing temperatures and snow yesterday. There was an emergency protest downtown. Talk about it a little. What brought people out?
Well, Lisa, what brought people out was yet another fatal shooting at the hands of ICE in Minneapolis. This time of 37-year-old Alex Pretty, a ICU room nurse who was actually born in Illinois. Mm-hmm. ICE is saying he had a loaded weapon and that he when they confronted him. But reports seem to refute that he brandished any kind of weapon.
Right.
That's according to the Associated Press after looking at a number of videos from bystanders. So you had a number of folks who protested in downtown, but they were also in Little Village. There was one in Logan Square. And I even see some protesters on a pedestrian bridge over Lakeshore Drive near Hyde Park yesterday on my way home.
Yeah, and there were some out in Oak Park near where I live over some of the bridges over the Eisenhower. So, you know, people are out. People are out talking about it. And several local leaders called for ICE to be abolished at yesterday's rally in March. And Mayor Brandon Johnson was there. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
We are not okay with ICE attempting to occupy our cities. We are not okay with ICE killing and shooting innocent people without impunity. We are not okay with this, Chicago. And that's why we have made it absolutely clear, not only should we defund ICE, but it is time to abolish ICE and send Greg Bovino out!
And the mayor, not the only one with strong words over the weekend. Governor Pritzker also writing on a social media post, it is time to abolish Trump's ICE. Susie, a lot of schools were canceled Friday because of the dangerous cold. How does it look today?
Well, if you are a CPS student and you are not in school today, you are in trouble because school is in session. The buildings are open for CPS students. However, there are some suburban schools, also Gary, Indiana, that might have delayed openings, closures, complete closures, but also e-learnings. Dozens of outer suburban schools from Oaklawn to Calumet City, Alsip. So, it's 9 o'clock right now. So if you don't know, you are either late for school or, you know, go ahead, keep sleeping in.
I guess so. Yeah. The Tribune last week had an editorial that was saying if kids are home because of the weather, just let them have a snow day. E-learning, no bueno, right? What do you all think, Mohammed? Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm all on board for that just because, you know, when I was in college, you know, that's when everything had moved to remote. So there was a lot of e-learning involved. And even as a college student, I found it hard to focus just because of the trying to learn in a home environment. Mm. And so I can only imagine what that must be like for students a lot younger than what I was in college. So I would say just let them have the day, let them reset, and then come back Tuesday with a fresh.
Exactly. That sounds good. But like when it's super cold and you can't send the kids outside and you're also having to work at home, I would.
You've got young kids.
Yes, I would love for them to. They're going to have screen time. I would like for it to be somewhat guided and educational. My kids were feral on Friday, and it was tough to work. So snow day, if there's actual like healthy being outside playing in the snow, but that just wasn't the case for us on Friday.
What's your thoughts,
Michael?
Well,
you know, I think it's okay, but if it's going to extend for more than a day, and it can happen, I know sure. Susie mentioned the Gary schools. You got to understand, you look outside of Chicago Navy Pier, it's bright and sunny. The lake effect snow machine is still working in Northwest Indiana, you can definitely feel the bend of the lake, how it really impacts the snow. So Chesterton, Valpo, points out east, they're still getting impacted by all this, where you could literally drive into a snowstorm. I'm not saying that's happening now, but it's just really tough for kids to get them out there. It's cold. Just let them have a day. But if it extends, I mean, sometimes e-learning could be a good day.
Yeah. Mohammed, now I know that tourism leaders in Chicago are sort of leaning into the cold. You know, what do you have on that? They're trying to bring people here now?
So Choose Chicago CEO Kristen Reynolds had said that it's time to really start pushing winter instead of being defensive about it. And she wants Chicago to follow New York's lead and start really aggressively packaging events during the cold weather months.
With what activities?
So like Christmas tree lighting ceremony was one example. Reynolds was in attendance at some of the Bears games that were really in that cold weather environment.
Okay.
She wants to kind of capture the magic of winter in the city.
Okay. You know, you cannot, Susie's doubtful here. You cannot like guarantee we're going to have the beautiful snow that we had, you know, yesterday. I thought it was gorgeous looking. So we've got all the snow right now, but you can't guarantee that it will be snowy and or super cold. So I don't know. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. One of Chicago's most popular farmers market, Green City Market, is going to have a permanent year-round home in the North Center neighborhood. Does this sound exciting to any of you, or is it just like a grocery store? This is not exciting at all. Michael?
Yeah, I think if it's in an indoor setting and it's really nice, it's out of the cold, sure, why not? But if it's outdoors, I know, Lisa, you're such a positive person. You don't mind the snow and the cold. I'm kind of like, yeah, I've had enough of this already.
You've had enough. It's only January. We're not even at the end of January here. What about you, Mohammed? Does this sound exciting to you?
Yes and no. I think I'm with Michael in the sense of that I'm just ready for the warm weather to come back.
Okay, well, you're not in the right place. Susie.
I mean, I would definitely check it out as something to to change up the winter activities a bit. I really associate farmers markets with warm weather. So maybe going over the winter will just kind of spark that sort of joy in me. I don't know.
Maybe. I try it out. Maybe. Okay. Let's talk sports a little bit. Was anybody watching football over the weekend?
Oh, yeah.
I watched a little of the Denver-New England game, and I was kind of yanked back to the Snow Bowl when the Bears were playing, and I can't remember what team. Someone will call and tell me who they were playing when it was the Snow Bowl. Did you watch any football?
Oh, of course. You know, the whole time was like, man, the Bears could play them. The Bears could. And it would have been so great to see a rematch between the Bears and the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. 40 years ago today, they won the Super Bowl, their only Super Bowl that they won.
Well, so, it's not happening.
It's not happening.
It's not happening. Reality.
But it's, you know, begrudgingly, I was like, man, but I'm just such a football fanatic that I think this year's Super Bowl is going to be fantastic.
It's going to be good. What about you, Muhammad, football fan?
Yeah, so I took the week off yesterday after, you know, my heart rate just couldn't handle more football after keeping up with the Bears.
Yes. Yeah.
So I decided to look out for my health yesterday and just stay away for the time being. But I will have eyes on the Super Bowl.
Okay. Susie, who are you rooting for then?
Now we're all for the Seahawks, you know.
Are we? Do we have to be?
My kids are, because they're like, well, you know, we want them to beat the Rams. And now that they have, they're like, all right, go all the way now.
Fair enough.
My daughter's the same way. She's like, no way. I'm not going to go for the Rams. And I was just, my loyalty shift during a game. I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. Does it? Does it?
Unless does the
Bears,
matter. Yes.
Unless the Bears are in there. Okay. Exactly. I know, Susie, you have to head back to the anchor studio, but I want to talk a little bit. What else is on your radar for the news going on today?
Over the weekend, we saw the Dining Awards, the 2026 Bonchet Awards.
Right.
Several winners there. Restaurant of the Year for Indienne. Chef of the Year, John Mannion of El Shea in Bracero. Brand new restaurant award winner, Feld. You know, it was a moment of celebration, but also a call to action. You know, some of the winners use the moment as sort of a political platform to speak out against specifically immigration enforcement. So that was an interesting kind of take to see the celebration and sort of that moment to use their platform.
I've been talking with Susie Ahn, WBEZ editor of Curious City, Michael Puente, WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor, and from the Chicago Sun-Times, Mohammed Samra.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.